It's like a son who has been estranged and now he finally sees his beloved mother. It's like coming home, and the voice that calls out from within you is, there is a God. All this time I've been worshiping, doing these rituals and talking about God, but yes, there is a God.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, as always, we hope we're inviting you on a spiritual journey. And in the middle of this particular episode, we'll also hear about an actual journey, the Hajj, a required pilgrimage, if you can do it, in Islam. I'm in studio with Heather Bigley today.
Hello.
And Imam Shoaib Dean, he's a friend of the show. He's been in our panel discussions, and I was so thrilled to hear from him.
Yes, he's the director of religious affairs at Utah Islamic Center, located in West Jordan City, Utah. Born in Wisconsin, raised in Chicago, and he graduated from the Institute of Islamic Studies in Dewberry, England, and then completed a five-year course in Islamic theology at Darul Uloom University in Karachi, Pakistan. And he's going to tell us he's been an imam here in Utah for 24 years, which is quite unusual.
Yeah, and he has woven himself into the fabric of the community, not just his own religious community. This is something I really admire. For all the work that takes to help shepherd and be there to teach a congregation, that he makes time to explain Islam and to participate in interfaith work, that's a lot of extra unpaid work, but he really buys into this mission.
Yeah, and we're going to pick up this discussion between Steve and the imam, where the imam talks about how Muslims are feeling right now in a time of increased Islamophobia.
Honestly, we are feeling vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
It almost mirrors how we felt after 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And our Jewish brothers and sisters, you know, may God protect them. There has been a rise in anti-Semitism since October 7th, but there has also been a rise in Islamophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been a greater rise in Islamophobia. The peak is much higher. But for some reason, we are not getting the attention in the media, the rise in Islamophobia since October 7th, that our Jewish brothers and sisters are receiving. So the issues are not being addressed properly through the proper channels.
So wherever we live, we should be aware that that is happening, whether we're hearing about it
Correct.
Or not.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. On both accounts, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia,
right.
Placing responsibility on people simply for what faith they're part of, it just shouldn't happen.
True.
On a happier note,
mm-hmm.
I think people would love hearing just a little bit about the Hajj and what the call in the Quran says about that, and then what that experience means.
Well, the Quran simply states that وَلِلَّهِ عَلَى النَّاسِ حِجُّ الْبَيْتِ, it is mandatory on the people to perform the Hajj for the one who is able to, who has the financial and physical means. He's physically healthy and has the financial means to go for Hajj. And God knows it's getting more and more expensive each year. So what has been happening is, in the olden days, it was almost a 6 month to a year journey. Now people, you know, get on a flight at JFK and 11 hours later, they're at Jeddah Airport. So it's a lot more people are going for Hajj. It brings around 4 million to 6 million people every year.
Wow.
From all around the world. And that diversity that you see in Hajj, you see that in one other place. And that is every mosque in America.
That same diversity.
That same diversity. But logistically speaking, the best example I can give is if you are having not one Super Bowl, but 10 Super Bowls. Okay, in your city at the same time.
And what would that do to traffic and restaurants and,
Correct.
And all of that? Oh, boy.
And you have a stadium of 100,000 people. Each of those 10 stadiums can accommodate 100,000. And everyone is playing the game. That is the Hajj, logistically. You have a window of 4 or 5 hours to perform a certain ritual. And all 4 million people have to perform that ritual within that window of 5 hours.
And
It's possible.
It happens. It happens.
And tell us about the ritual, what people have traveled to participate in.
It's for 5 days, mm-hmm. the 8th to the 12th of the 12th lunar month. One of the rituals is to take 7 pebbles and to pelt a wall. That wall symbolizes where the devil tried to tempt Abraham to not carry out the command of God to sacrifice his son Ishmael. Mm. We believe it was Ishmael, not Isaac.
Right, right.
So Abraham picked up some pebbles and threw it at the devil. Guess what every pilgrim has to do?
Pick up pebbles.
Pick up pebbles and throw it. Aim it at that wall. Thank God now there's 5 levels, and each level can accommodate 250,000 people at one time.
That's a lot of pebbles.
That's a lot of people, a lot of pebbles. Yes. The Hajj has everything to do with Abraham and Ishmael and his mother, Hagar, and almost nothing to do with Prophet Muhammad. The Hajj was happening 3,000 years before Prophet Muhammad was even born, from the time of Abraham.
I did not know that. Mm. Wow.
Yes.
And so isn't there something about the place where the angel appeared to Hagar and she was praying for water?
Right, yes. Abraham left her there, Hagar and Ishmael, and went on a mission, and God called out that we will take care of you and your progeny. And she goes back, and what does she see? Water gushing out. There is water that is still gushing out, even after 5,000 years. That well called Zamzam, every pilgrim who goes to the Hajj, he will definitely drink that water.
Then finally, the Kaaba, what does that represent? And circumambulating, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Kaaba was built by Abraham, and it connects with the Temple Mount or the Dome of the Rock Mosque, because Abraham, after building the Kaaba, he went and then built the House of God in Jerusalem. So both, we believe, the founders were Abraham. Prophet Suleiman, he built the temple, the first temple, we believe, on the foundation that Abraham had laid 1,000 years or so before.
On the rock of that sacrifice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So circumambulating it is to be in sync with nature, with God, with one. You are circumambulating in the same direction as the planets of the earth and with nature and with the rest of humanity.
Well, the press of people must be huge, but also everyone dressed alike. The equality of the people is impressive and seems like it would create unity wherever you're from, whatever language. Can I bring it down to the very personal? First of all, what was that like for you the first time? And how old were you?
I was in my late 20s when I went for the first time. And it's beyond description, but if I was to describe it, it's like a son who has been estranged from his mother for 20, 30, 40 years of his life, and now he finally sees his mother, his beloved mother. Mm. What will be his reaction? He will run up to his mother. He will want to hug her and never let go. It's like coming home, and the voice that calls out from within you is, there is a God. You know, all this time I've been worshiping, doing these rituals and talking about God, but yes, there is a God.
So a confirmation
right.
of faith. But then the many, many times you have taken pilgrims back, what do you see in them? Is there a before and an after in their life?
For many, there is. For most people, there is. There definitely is supposed to be a change. It's meant to be a life-changing experience. And I think in the olden days, it was more of a life-changing experience than it is today. And that's probably because of the 6 month to a year journey on foot, earning your way there, stopping in cities, talking to scholars, learning from the scholars on your way to Mecca. Imagine if you're traveling from China or anywhere in the Middle East to Mecca, hundreds, thousands of miles.
Right.
So today, you're sitting on a plane, you're there, then you're back in your office 2 weeks later, right?
Oh,
so
I see.
It's probably not as much of a life-changing experience, but it definitely still is.
I know you have a congregation. You volunteer so much time being part of community organizations because it seems very important to you that people get correct information from you as a source about what members of Islam believe. Do you see that making a change? I hope you do.
Yes, people have come, you know, we have an open door policy. One young man, he came, and after the Friday sermon, it was just a run-of-the-mill sermon, nothing too special. But after my Friday sermon, he had tears in his eyes. And we had just given him a bottle of water. I think that's the most we had for him that day. But he was so impressed that with tears in his eyes, he said, there's a lot of bigotry out there, and I was part of it. You know, because of the comments that he probably made on the internet. But he said, now my eyes are open. So yes, people do come and they do see that we are not, as some people might want us to make us out to be.
Well, that's a beautiful story. So you have the interesting challenge of teaching new converts. What is most important for someone to learn if they have just converted to Islam, but they're still learning?
Well, I think the first is the five daily prayers. So we try to teach them the prayers because that is important. But apart from prayers, they need to feel welcome because many of times they no longer have those same social circles or connections that they had before accepting Islam, before converting. So they might not have those same, you know, familiar ties with their families and friends. So new friendships and new ties must be formed. So that's important. The social aspect, to take care of them and make sure they feel welcome.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but when you talk about these things, you get very engaged and you always smile. That may be your nature, or maybe it's the topic we're on. So what gives you joy about your faith personally, and then what you do in your faith?
It's job satisfaction. A lot of, you know, pay might not be great, but you really get a lot of job satisfaction. You know you're making a difference. You know you are a part of people's lives in their happy moments, in their sad moments. You grieve with them. You rejoice with them. You make a difference. You help people. You offer solutions.
When do you feel God's presence, or that God is pleased with what you're doing, or that you are doing His work, some sense of that?
Honestly, not so much when I'm giving a fiery sermon and I pat myself on the back and say, you know, job well done. But when I, if there's a good deed that no one on this entire planet knows what I have done.
Well, now I can't even ask what it might be. So.
So it could be something as simple as giving someone a ride in the snow. Just to the nearest track station. And I don't come home and I don't even tell my wife. But I know that that's been recorded with God.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. More in just a moment. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. When you talk about current events, do you ever feel like you have to tiptoe around people you know, or maybe even family members, because it seems like some topics are just like landmines? Can I even bring up this topic and have a civil discussion without starting a civil war within my family? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind, with award-winning journalist Julie Rose. Top of Mind dives into those tough topics, but it does it in a way that actually models how to have intelligent conversations, ask questions out of sincere curiosity, seeking to understand. Top of Mind is not trying to take a position and change your mind or persuade you. It is exploring. You'll come away with more empathy and clarity so that you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, even family member. Listen to Top of Mind wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. Today we're speaking with Imam Shoaib Dean about God's mercy. When you were young, what do you remember first learning or feeling about Allah and making a connection that this was something to do with you?
My father, he was a civil engineer. He was not an imam. But somewhere in the back of his mind, when he came in 65 to the U.S., he felt that sooner or later there would be a need for imams in this country. It's not just the Holy Trinity, doctor, engineer, and lawyer. There would be a need for, and there is now a genuine need for imams all across the U.S., qualified imams. So he encouraged me to go in this direction. And I think my religious zeal, that I was trying to memorize the Quran on my own, you know, sitting in my garage.
That's commitment.
Yes. So he kind of saw that, and yes, he picked up on it, encouraged it, And as they say, rest is history.
Were you able to learn to recite it all?
I've not memorized the whole entire Quran, but yes, I've memorized a chunk of it.
Ah, wonderful. Is there a section or are there stories or advice or direction from God that are favorite places or things that you really hold on to that you think of or that gives you purpose or strength?
There's quite a few powerful verses in the Quran that serves as a beacon of light. وَلَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شَنَآنُ قَوْمٍ عَلَىٰ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُ. Do not let the ill feelings that you have towards any one group of people. We as human beings might harbor some ill feelings towards one group of people or any group. Do not let those feelings compel you to be unjust. Mm. Be just. Be fair. That is closer to God. Oh,
that fights against our natural impulse.
Right.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah.
I think I could use that on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Is there some time when you have realized that God was working in your life? Whether you clearly knew something to do or once it was done, you realized this was God working and sending me or leading me.
I think every human being has a personal journey in his life. Mm-hmm. That personal journey, God is your guide. He takes you by the hand, especially when you stumble and fall. Mm. And you think it's not humanly possible to ever recover, to ever get up from this fall. Mm. But then miraculously you do recover and you're back on the road.
I so often in descriptions or prayers that I'll hear a part of in English so I can understand them is talking about Allah or talking about God the Merciful. How do you sense that mercy?
I sense it in the fact that no matter how sinful a person is, mm-hmm. God is ready to forgive. He doesn't hold back. Human beings, even if we do forgive, it's very superficial. Mm. We might forgive, but we never forget.
Right. We're going to be sure we don't.
So a person can fall 100 times.
Do you see that happening with people, that they are surprised by the mercy of God, that God is still reaching out to them or open to them?
I think one of the unfortunate trends in many mosques is that we talk more about the angry God, the vengeful God, than we do about the loving God. Mm. And I do see that changing. It is changing somewhat. And more sermons are now speaking openly about the loving nature of God. So yes, when people find out, when people realize how loving God is, how merciful, how forgiving, they do get teary-eyed because all of us are sinners.
That's very moving to me. So there's a lot of distrust in institutions, not just religious, but we see young people especially leaving religious institutions. Do you see that effect as well?
They say the fastest growing religion in America is not Islam, it's atheism. Mm. Because you have people from the Christian faith, from the Jewish faith, from the Islamic faith, from all faiths turning towards atheism. So yes, we do have that. We do have that problem. But we are very, should I say, egalitarian in the sense that we're not that organized. One person, he stood up at F and said in a very rough tone, "I hate organized religion." I'm like, "You should join us. We're the most disorganized." Because every mosque is independently owned and operated by the local community. There's no broad affiliation of mosques, right? There's no membership. Mm. Anyone can come and go. You can worship at a mosque and go unnoticed for decades. You don't have to pay if you don't want to. There's no compulsory donation. In that sense, people should feel comfortable. Right. But yes, there is that general trend I think is worrisome and is a challenge for all faith traditions, the youth, how to attract the youth back to the mosque. But having said that, there's a survey that's done every 10 years of places of worship, and a mosque membership, or should I say the attendees, the congregants at a mosque tend to be more younger in age compared to churches and synagogues.
Interesting. How imam has God surprised you? I'm going to guess maybe being the imam for a mosque in the greater Salt Lake City area was a surprise. You would not have thought of that growing up in Chicago or Wisconsin?
Correct. And out of all places, Utah. I was on one of those missionary trips in Pakistan, and I met some people from West Valley City, Utah.
Of course.
and they're like, we have a mosque in West Valley, and we need an imam. So I mistakenly gave them my phone number, and that's when they started calling me after I came back to Chicago. And then I said, okay, I'll come once. I came once and gave the Friday sermon, and that's mm-hmm. like your job interview. And then I thought that would be the end of it, but they ended up calling me even more than before. And then I just came. What's probably surprised me and a lot of other people is how long I've stayed here.
Which is how many years?
24 years.
Wow.
So that's a pretty long time for an imam to stay put in one place.
And I know I'm not asking you to predict the future, but I will say during the time, you have reached out beyond your community and you have made so many connections, both in interfaith circles and just other things that you do, that you participate in, that show me that you really have a heart for the people that you serve and helping them be more comfortable and creating a place, a community where they can be more comfortable as well. Mm-hmm. That's a huge task.
It's time consuming in the sense that it takes years and years of work. Connections, friendships, bonds, where you trust each other and have a working relationship, because to have a working relationship with a synagogue or a church needs trust between the leadership. So that takes years and years to form those connections.
That was Steve talking to Imam Shoaib Dean from the West Jordan City, Utah Mosque. And just a note, we started that conversation talking about Hajj, and Hajj has to be completed during a certain specific time period of the year. In 2024, that's June 14th to the 19th, also known as Eid al-Adha. Just imagine millions of stones being thrown against a wall. I can't even imagine what that would look like, and I don't think I'll ever get that opportunity. But pretty fantastic, this ritual that brings people home to the foundations of their religion and helps them feel closer to God.
Yeah, when he mentioned being there, people by the millions associated together, the way he put it, he suddenly felt, I've been worshiping, I've been doing these rituals, talking about God, but I feel God here. There is a God.
Yeah.
What a great moment in your spiritual life.
Yeah. We don't talk about movies very often here. Have you ever seen Spike Lee's Malcolm X? There's a scene where Malcolm X goes to Mecca. Mm. And it's the first time that Malcolm X realizes that he needs to be brothers with everyone. He had a very divisive rhetoric before his trip to Mecca, and it's after Mecca when he comes home that he goes, oh, these are all people I'm supposed to love. Mm. And if Mecca can do that for Malcolm X, I say, let's have as many people as possible go to Mecca, right? That's a wonderful, wonderful thing to walk away from.
And I'm very much reminded that when I hear Islamophobic comments or rhetoric, if I hear anti-Semitism or against anyone's beliefs, it's on me to say, wait a minute, I know people, and you're not talking about the people I know. I hope they will do the same for me, but I need to be willing to do that. That's my effort to my brothers and sisters of various faiths around the world. Many thanks to Shoaib Dean for speaking with us today. Our episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Do you think the world would be a better place if we learned better how to talk with each other about each other's faith traditions? If so, be sure and leave a comment or review for In Good Faith at YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts.
Find us on Twitter or X at In Good Faith Pod, on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Find us on YouTube, www.youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.